What's up, party people? This is Chris DeRose.
And this is John Seth.
And this is a special edition of Bitcoin Uncensored.
We
do these
special, but with nowadays it's kind of just what we're doing.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I don't know. We have like the usual dialogue between you and I, where we kind of like spar on the latest Bitcoin issues. And this is not that. This is time with a specialist of one person in the community. In this case, what we have today is Jay Kwan, who I believe is he the lead dev and co-founder of Tendermint.
Yeah.
So
Tendermint. What did I say? Mint Pal.
Like, yeah,
one scam for another.
Well, the guy was brave enough to come on our show, and he answered our questions, and we'd like to share those answers with you. I like the way that interview went. We're going to listen to it now, and then we're going to come back with a little post-interview roundup. And if you like this interview, check out some of the other ones on our channel. We really have been doing a great job of getting actual
content. It's a little like
content.
Stick up your ass there, a little great job.
Well, you know
how
what?
You
everyone,
know
everyone delivers spam, and we are committed to not delivering spam.
Yeah, we do our best not to
and,
send
and
spam.
And hopefully you agree with
no,
this
I,
definition
I agree.
Of content.
I agree.
So yeah. let's give it a row. Let's go. With us right now is Jay Kwan of the Tendermint Project.
Tendermint!
Jay, introduce yourself. How did you get involved in Tendermint? What brought you here today?
Hey, I got involved in Tendermint 2 years ago when I tried to solve a problem in the cryptocurrency space. And I can talk about it as we go. Basically, I love the idea of decentralized databases, having a computer that people can run and secure themselves. I think it's power that it can be used to great good, and I believe in it. So that's why I'm here. I'm here to make the space better and to help us move forward for the next generation of blockchain technology.
So, yeah, so for the audience, they may not know, probably they do, but you and I kind of had some conversation online. I've talked to your business partner, who was a very nice guy. Remind us, what's his name?
Dustin,
that was it.
He's
very
tall.
Down here in Miami. And I'm very, very into distributed databases, and I'm also very skeptical about Tendermint. So what I'd like to hear is just maybe some explanations about the project and where it's going, and even just about your thinking about what blockchains are and such.
Can we start out with what Tendermint is, just a quick overview for the audience?
Sure. Uh-huh. Tendermint is a blockchain platform. It's a way to create new blockchain applications that are secure. And the core component is a consensus algorithm that gives it security, similar to how Bitcoin does it, but with different properties. And it doesn't require electricity or mining. It works with public key cryptography and quorums.
Okay, so I mean, that was my understanding of the project. I think it came out of Microsoft Research, no? Is it not like a history there?
I don't have a history with Microsoft Research, no.
But I thought the project had some kind of history with Microsoft in its infancy. Is that not in fact true?
No, the project has not had any association with Microsoft.
That's interesting. Okay, I'll have to double check on that. Now, you've been in the distributed database space for how long exactly?
I started this in March of 2014.
Gotcha. So you haven't been working with distributed databases then prior, and you weren't even perhaps interested in Bitcoin prior. Is that correct?
Well, I was very interested in Bitcoin starting in 2012. And in late 2013, I was about to launch a cryptocurrency exchange. I had a funny name. It was called Fort Knox, FTNOX. And, you know, got the, figured out which states I can launch it at and, you know, registered as a money transmitter and all that. And, was going to launch it. And then there was this problem in Bitcoin that I was trying to solve, you know, the consensus problem. One day everything started clicking. So I dropped all of that and started running to solve the problem that Tendermint is solving today.
And what problem would you describe that as? How would you describe this big problem, maybe?
It's helping secure the ledger without electric mining.
Gotcha.
And making it scalable so you can have many secure blockchains.
Okay, so a couple things. I guess it seems like when you were into the crypto platforms, what you saw as interesting in this space was transferring value with a permissionless system. Is that a good characterization of your early interests? Is that what attracted you to this?
Yeah, you know, when Bitcoin came out, that's all it was, right? It was only a permissionless open ledger. But soon I started thinking about different kinds of ledgers that can be secured, not just by the public, but by a permission set. In fact, I think that the private-public blockchain distinction is maybe not the best way to think about how blockchains work. The way I think about it, a blockchain is kind of like a country or a nation of individuals or individual entities. And nations can choose to accept or reject immigrants or new citizens. And you know, it really depends on what the people want, how they decide to govern themselves, and how they decide to change membership. And so I think there's no fine line between what is public and private.
It sounds like you like the BitNation project.
I do support the BitNation project and all similar projects that try to create new governance systems. I don't mean to say that I'm trying to overthrow anything, but we do want to build better systems.
So walk us through the problem you have with the consensus mechanism of Bitcoin exactly. What is it about the process that you think is wasteful maybe?
Well, this is arguable. Some people say that Bitcoin's mining is not wasteful because it serves a purpose. And to that degree, I completely agree. I do think that Bitcoin is effective and it is really secure because in order to attack the system, you need to expend a lot of energy to create a fork. And it's difficult to do that unless you have the infrastructure and the energy. But it's wasteful in the sense that it's not necessary. I don't think it's necessary. I think it's good to have, and I think it's good to have alternatives. But I think it's also possible to secure ledgers without mining. And in that sense, that's what I mean by wasteful.
I mean, some of that is kind of a little strange for me because it sounds like on the one hand you believe it's necessary, on the other hand you believe it isn't, and then on top of that, I'm still not sure I understand what is necessarily wasteful. Is it the CO2 output that you don't like, or is it that perhaps like energy, in some sense, like you feel is just some kind of overhead?
Is it a subsidy argument?
So the way that Bitcoin secures itself is proportional, the security is proportional to how much energy you put in. So if you want more security, you have to expend more energy as a whole. But what if instead of that energy expenditure, which really isn't very useful in its own right, besides for the consensus aspect, what if instead of that, we can just create a system based off of accountability and collateral? You wouldn't need to burn anything. You wouldn't need to have this increase in entropy to secure a ledger.
That's very fair. I mean, if in fact, if you recognize that a permission system is in fact secured by empathy at some level or trust, in each other. I mean, that's fairly consistent. It seems a bit at odds with your initial goals in this space, though, which was presumably
permissionless
value transfer.
Value transfer, exactly.
Yeah. At some point, you pivoted, and I'm guessing it's because you saw energy being burned. Is this like an environmental concern? I guess you're very into like environmentalism or something.
I do think that the environment is very important, and I think there's not enough discussion about the environmental impact of proof of work mining. It doesn't mean I don't think that it's bad to have Bitcoin. I think it's great to have alternatives, but I just want to make sure that we have other alternatives that are more sustainable.
So have you heard the argument that mining is the process of converting value from one system to another by burning the value in the legacy system and in doing so, creating that transfer into the new system? Is that an argument that's been presented to you before, and how do you dismiss that?
Right. I have heard of similar arguments. It does make sense, but it assumes that the Bitcoin network will retain that value. And that is yet to be proven. So currently today, yes, Bitcoin is worth however many billions in the market cap. But it's not like you can take the value back out of Bitcoin. Once you burnt that electricity and you spent that energy, and you've transferred it into Bitcoin, it's a one-way street. You can't take it back out.
That's not true.
To be fair, yeah. As someone who attempted to start an exchange, you know that that's not true.
Right.
Well, I mean...
You know, that's absolutely dishonest.
Maybe we're misunderstanding here.
You can convert Bitcoin into real value.
To move value out so you can sell your Bitcoins. But the energy that was burnt, say, you know, which was at one point on the order of $1 million a day, it's probably a little less than that today, that is gone. We will never be able to use that energy again. It's not any physical commodity that can retain itself. It's not a physical good. It's just gone.
But that's not an economic concern. That's an environmental concern. Like we don't care that our car has converted energy into propulsion. Say that energy is not coming back. Right? It's been rendered thermodynamically useless. But we have plenty of energy on Earth. Like it seems to me that it's if you don't like the environmentalism aspect, and there's a great case to be made for that, you could make that case.
But that's not the case you're making.
But it doesn't seem that's the case it's making, right?
That is part of the case I'm making.
What's the other part?
The environmental aspect is absolutely one of the reasons that I've created Tendermint.
Okay, so then so usually when I talk to people that are into proof-of-stake systems, that's consistent with their belief. Like Vitalik is very big into it, and I understand that the environment is a big concern. But typically it's the government that controls those externalities. And at least in my mind, if in fact that is an issue, then what you would want to do is reduce the premium on fungible value in our economy and not necessarily create these sort of obscure databases that require trust. It seems like that's a parallel development to the entirety of the blockchain proposition.
I'm sorry, you cut off a little bit.
Sure. It seems to me that what you're arguing against is the externality costs of
burning energy,
of the regulatory compliance required to route fungible value in our economy.
Right.
So wouldn't the solution be to reduce if you cared about this issue, wouldn't the solution then be to petition the government to reduce the premium on fungible value?
What do you mean by the premium of fungible value? Do you mean like reducing the mining reward on Bitcoin?
No. Things like, you know, legalizing prostitution or ending the drug war, things that like we currently need fungible value for.
Correct.
Like making it less risky to...
Drugs.
Yeah, drugs.
I mean, I think it's great to legalize drugs and stop the war on drugs. I don't see how that relates to the argument that we need alternative blockchain technologies to secure it and to scale it.
Okay, you can think about that for a bit because it seems to me that that's a pretty easy argument to digest over time.
It's also, if you think back to why you came to Bitcoin in the first place, I think it probably relates to that reason as well, does it not? Like, did you come to Bitcoin didn't you come to Bitcoin because of the fungible value transfer, the permissionless fungible value transfer?
Well, I think of it this way. You know, I came to Bitcoin and came to appreciate Bitcoin because I saw that it had the power to give people a way to coordinate themselves however they wanted. And in the case of Bitcoin, it's with a particular set of instructions. It's a particular system that preserves a total amount of Bitcoins in the cryptocurrency network. But I think it's important to have alternatives, as in, I don't believe that Bitcoin is the one and only system that people should use to coordinate commerce. I think that people should experiment. I think there are all kinds of systems that we want to create and try out. And we can't do that if Bitcoin is going to be the only proof of work secure blockchain. You know, there's problems with proof of work where it's difficult to create alternative blockchains that are plausibly secure when Bitcoin is so big.
Why is that a problem, though? That's just the universe doesn't owe you as many blockchains as you want, right? The universe is what we have. And if that's, in fact, the model that's working, what's your complaint? Is it that we should have a universe where blockchains are mined at infinity or something? Yeah.
It would be great. Okay, so... it would be great. This is what I was thinking back in 2013. I was thinking it would be great if we can create parallel blockchains that are secure in their own right and cannot be threatened by any external force, including the existing Bitcoin miners. Okay, so what I mean is, if I start a new proof of work cryptocurrency, say, it would not be plausibly secure unless it were like maybe merged mine, but even then it wouldn't be, because the Bitcoin miners have such great infrastructure for mining that a small chain will never be able to take off. But if we could, if there was any way to create parallel blockchains that are secure in their own right and that cannot be attacked by external forces, then we have something interesting. And I just wanted that interesting scenario to unfold. And that's why Tendermint exists.
I mean, it seems
it
like
is possible.
It seems like, well, we can talk about that next, but it seems like what I see a lot in the proof of stake crowd these days is the recognition that, in fact, proof of work lends itself towards the longest chain being the only chain. And it seems like you perhaps saw that even running an altcoin exchange, that the mining stats would be such that they would in fact encourage only a single chain to perform at the expense of all others. Is that fair characterization, that you're doing this because you saw that truth?
Yeah, that's a truth in proof of work.
We believe that, so that's good. I mean, we have that in common. But let's talk a little bit about the Tendermint value proposition, because this is where I get really stuck. There's any number of...
Can we quickly define... What do you think... Can you define for us what you believe a blockchain is?
Oh, that's a good, yeah.
That's a great question. And I think a lot of people have different thoughts on it, and I'll share mine. I think at the core of it is a Byzantine fault-tolerant system. It has to be something that can run in the wild, as in the public, in the open, and be able to sustain and function despite attacks from within.
That's one thing. Okay.
And the second thing is the techniques that are used in Bitcoin that include Merkle trees, public-private cryptography, and light client security.
But not proof of work.
I don't think of proof of work as being a core component of blockchains, no.
Who do you believe invented the first blockchain?
It was Satoshi Nakamoto.
Have you heard his definition of the word blockchain?
It's. Can you remind me? What was it?
So he defined it in the code. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'd love to remind you. So give me one second while I bring this up. I should probably have this more at the ready, but bear with me while I find it. And give me a second here.
Your internet sucks.
It's not that. I'm looking forward to my Twitter feed here, because I always have to remind people, because a lot of people seem to like, I guess you invented your own definition, which is fine, mm-hmm. but you seem to credit Satoshi as the inventor. And here, I found the actual definition. All right, here we go. Nodes collect new transactions into a block, hash them into a hash tree, and scan through nonce values to make the block's hash satisfy proof of work requirements. When they solve the proof of work, they broadcast the block to everyone, and the block is added to the blockchain. And therein is the definition. And principally in that definition, you will notice that proof of work is the prime component that Satoshi used to define what a blockchain was. What do you think now that you've heard that definition? Do you think that Satoshi himself perhaps was still the originator of that term, or are you now inclined to believe that he is not?
Well, I don't think that definition implies that proof of work is a necessary component. If you look at the word blockchain, it's just a combination of two words, which means a chain of blocks.
Are you engaging in self-preservation at this moment? Just in that you were given a definition that had quite literally the word proof of work in it twice in two separate sentences. And your reaction, rather than digest it maybe, is to suggest that
blockchain.
He was wrong.
He didn't define it.
I'm sorry, say it again?
He used the word blockchain, but nowhere does it say that that is the only type of blockchain.
I would suggest you will probably have to believe, I think, in order for your project to make sense, that Satoshi didn't originate the blockchain, which is fine. You can do that. I think that you'll have a hard time reckoning that logic against what was in the main.h file of the Bitcoin code.
Okay. Well, you know, words are whatever we make it to mean.
That's true.
I choose to use the word blockchain to mean both something that includes both Bitcoin and also something that includes Tendermint.
Of course.
And a lot of other alternative solutions. And there's a good reason why Tendermint requires a chain of blocks, where a block is a list of transactions. And there are technical reasons why it needs to be that way. It's mostly about efficiency. And it's not the same reason why Bitcoin requires a chain of blocks. But Tendermint requires it for different reasons. And so I think blockchain is a beautiful term that we can all agree on to mean something that includes all kinds of distributed ledger technologies.
I don't think so. You certainly, I respect that you have that opinion, but I believe that proof of work is the only definition for blockchain that makes any sense.
Can you talk about what this supposed efficiency is, however, that Tendermint gets from blocks?
Because, Tendermint a bit.
The reality of blockchains is that they're one of the most inefficient data structures that I've ever seen. Not that I am a programming expert or anything like that, but it's hard to deny that they are inefficient data structures. So what is it that Tendermint gets by throwing data into blocks as a data structure? If it's more than just telling the investors you're a blockchain.
Okay. So in Tendermint, which is based off of what I call classical BFT algorithms or classical Byzantine fault-tolerant algorithms, this is how the algorithm works. You need a set number, a fixed number of signers. They're like miners, except they have a public-private key pair, and they sign blocks. And you need a quorum, which just means a large majority, like two-thirds, to sign a block in order for that block to be considered committed. So in Tendermint's case, you require two rounds of communication. There's a lot more detail that I could go into, but probably it's best left for the wiki spec.
Well, I'd like to hear some of that. But
right, like how do you decide who the signers are?
Yeah, that's determined in the blockchain. So in the Genesis file, you're going to have a list of validators. And then through transactions to the blockchain, you can change the set of validators.
Wait, so is it a round robin, or is it based on the last hash value?
I'm sorry?
How is the next signer determined? Is it based on the hash of the last block, or is it based off of a round robin configuration?
Oh, I see. Yeah. If you base it off of the hash and try to make a pseudo random algorithm to determine who proposes the next block, you run into trouble with things like grinding attacks. Tendermint uses a deterministic round robin algorithm to determine who the next proposer is, and it also deals with proposers who are offline or are not available or try to propose bad blocks.
Now, doesn't that let the signer exercise moderation on which transactions get included, presumably like front-running type of decisions that we saw with the Ripple quote-unquote blockchain?
Yeah, front-running is always a problem for leader-based systems.
It's not a problem in Bitcoin.
Bitcoin has the same problem because
no,
the miner gets to choose the order of the transactions. And I think the solution to that is to make sure everybody gets the fair chance of proposing the block.
Well, though in the case of Bitcoin, it is probabilistic as opposed to deterministic. So while I get your point, the thing that I would bring up is, well, then why blockchain? Why not just use centralized servers like we do with, say, email?
Right. Let's get to that. But first, I should answer the original question, which is why a chain of blocks for Tendermint? Why does it increase efficiency?
Right.
It's because if you have, let's say, the letter N being a variable, N number of validators, it requires 2N squared signature communications for a node to for the network to actually come to consensus and get all those signatures. So if you have, say, 100 validators, we're talking about 2 × 100 × 100, and these signatures are like 64 bytes, so they're very short. But when you have a large number of validators, like 5,000 or 100,000, it requires a lot of communication. And that communication is being done to decide on anything at all, which means you want to batch up all the transactions so that into a block, so that you minimize the number of times you need to come to consensus on anything. That's why you need to batch it into blocks. That's what creates efficiency, because you don't need to decide on every single transaction, but you decide on a whole block of them.
So you're saying that because there's a block, that a subset of the participants on the network can be the signers, as opposed to all participants on the network being signers?
No, I don't mean, I'm not talking about subsets of signers. I'm talking about the difference between making decisions on every single transaction as a whole. So all the network always coming to a decision on every single transaction versus the whole network coming to decision on blocks of transactions. So obviously, I mean, the latter is more efficient because they're grouped into a single block.
Well, I don't know that the latter is more efficient. I mean, it seems to me the most efficient thing would be that anytime two banks or two individuals have a transaction, that those two would be the only two validators, right? And then maybe a third party that holds that data, which would be the immutability partner. So, I mean, that would be the most efficient system, right?
Well, that would be efficient in speed, but it wouldn't give you the same security characteristics that Tendermint does, or even Bitcoin. So the thing about Bitcoin and Tendermint is true in both. They're both additive in their security. And what I mean is, when you have more miners join the Bitcoin network, in general, you end up with proportionally more security. It's the same thing in Tendermint.
I'm still trying to understand. Sorry. I'm still trying to understand the claim about the blocks, though. I'm trying to figure out what subset. You're saying that, and forgive me if I'm wrong, but in Tendermint, don't all transactions need to be validated by all peers on the network
twice.
in the same way that it would have to be in Bitcoin in order to determine if the block is valid?
Yes, every block needs to be processed by every validator. And every validator is expected to sign and be present and basically sign every block. You don't require all of them to be up. That wouldn't be fault tolerant. But you require 2/3.
I'm still trying to figure out why the blocks are needed, though. Why can't you have individual transactions that are broadcast to anybody who needs to see those transactions? I think you're saying that that's more secure.
If you want to, say, commit one transaction, you would have to first share that transaction to everyone. So gossip it throughout the whole network. And then you would have to do the 2n² thing where you share signatures. And then you'd have to do, and then for the next transaction, you have to do the same thing. Share the transaction, gossip it throughout the network, and then have a proposer propose that transaction, you know, and then do the 2n² thing again, sharing all the signatures on it. So instead of doing that, we batch transactions into a block, share the block, and then do 2n² signature shares.
But it sounds like the security you're suggesting is in having copies of this data on your peers. Is that in fact the security? Because I don't know that you need that in any capacity,
and
it's adds
certainly
security.
Not more efficient.
Well, the security comes not just from the replication, but also from the guarantees of the protocol. So the consensus algorithm or the consensus protocol guarantees that the system will continue to function for as long as less than 1/3 of validators are malicious.
But my system would function as long as myself and my peer are up. So all I need is 2 people in order to work without a blockchain.
Right. But, you know, it's those transactions that we're talking about on Tendermint. I mean, any 2 people can agree. But what happens if there's a dispute between the 2 people? See, the blockchain, when you, for example, settle and close a payment channel between 2 parties, you submit the final state onto the blockchain so all the members, you know, the validators in the blockchain can see and agree on the final state between those 2 parties, even though there might have been a dispute between the 2 parties. There's still a way to finalize and make a decision about what the actual value should be. You require more than...
Let's also talk about the security costs of your security, or the opportunity costs of your security, in the form of the security costs of your security. So, how is it that you envision a model where banks are performing transactions that require there be an asymmetric understanding of the knowledge? So, if they want to create a smart contract, for example, between themselves and another party, and they want that smart contract not to be disclosed to the market so that they can guarantee the best execution result. So, for example, if you're buying futures or something like that in oil, you don't want the network to know what the orders are on the books for that, because that is, in fact, how you're able to negotiate better pricing. And what way, then, does the security cost in your mind rectify against that need for information asymmetry?
Yeah, you know, if banks want to create and put those trades on the blockchain, they're going to need to come up with a system of steering the information. So that might mean encrypting the trades. It might mean using homomorphic encryption or other techniques. Some have recently been published that allow you to verify, you know, holdings, assets, and liabilities without disclosing who owns what. Those techniques will have to be used. But I think the most benefit comes from complete transparency in blockchains. I think it's where it's best suited.
So, you know, Jay, I got to be frank with you. I hear these claims coming out of you, and they're not at all unusual for me in this space. And it seems to me that what you did, you came to Bitcoin, you saw that a lot of these altcoins did not work. And in doing so, you decided to try now to sell essentially a database that is completely tangential to all of the other developments in the space, to the bankers, because it says the word blocks in it, and because it in some way is what they're buying right now. Do you find it to be like quite a coincidence that here you are offering something that is the opposite of value transfer, that this is a messaging system? Do you think that's a bit convenient that all of a sudden you found this path, or do you think that just lo and behold, the technology innovations just lined up perfectly in this sense? Like, how do you explain how you got here, if not that the banks want to buy blocks, so you wish to sell it to them?
There's a lot in what you just asked, but, you know, I don't think of it as just a database. This Byzantine fault tolerance with accountability is what Bitcoin is. That was the innovation. Proof of work was the simplest way to get there. And because it was the simplest way to get there, Bitcoin was the first to create such a system.
So,
but there are other ways of creating systems with similar alternative methods of arriving at security, and that's what we've created.
So,
and it's not just banks that can benefit. It's, you know, it can be used for any distributed ledger system, and it can be used with the same effect as Bitcoin.
So
I don't want to say that we as a company are going to be launching cryptocurrencies. But I'm just saying, this is what we've created. It's an alternative way of securing distributed ledgers, a Byzantine fault tolerant way.
So Jay, let me maybe paint a history for you, at least the way I see it. Here comes Satoshi Nakamoto out of the blue in 2009, and he has created what everyone seems to agree is the blockchain, that this was, in fact, the bottleneck to the success that became Bitcoin.
To permissionless value transfer,
correct. And so Satoshi comes, and we look at what this blockchain is, which you didn't know what it was until about 30 minutes ago. And we looked at this, and it was, in fact, proof of work. Now, what you are advocating with your system is typically what Paxos or Raft, both of which were available in, I think, the 90s and 80s even. So what is it then, in your mind, that the bottleneck was to this technology? Is it the marketing of Bitcoin that was the bottleneck?
Or was it that you hadn't shown up and you were the Satoshi of, like, you know, permissionless message passing?
It's really, the bottleneck is understanding. So Raft and Paxos are not Byzantine fault tolerant. They are fault tolerant systems. And they can be used.
Can you define Byzantine fault tolerance?
And if you're using that, yeah, it's just a database. That's not what we've created. We've created a Byzantine fault tolerance system that can withhold, you know, is fault tolerant to attacks from within, to any malicious activity from within.
And why don't you talk a little bit about that then? What is Byzantine fault tolerance to you?
Well, it's not what it is to me, because there's a very clear definition of what it means. And okay, so Raft and Paxos allow for up to 1/3 of nodes to be faulty and crash, right? It's a fail stop fault tolerance is what they call it, or just fault tolerance for short. But Byzantine fault tolerance, what that means, a Byzantine actor is an actor who can act in any way. So there are no assumptions about how it can act or how it can fail. So when you have a system that can tolerate up to 1/3 of Byzantine actors, it means that the 1/3 can coordinate to try to subvert the entire system. Raft and Paxos do not address those.
Okay, I think that if that's the case, then, and correct me if I'm wrong, you believe that Tendermint will, in fact, be a public distributed ledger that is capable of competing then with Bitcoin, Bitcoin in this space. Is that true?
I believe that our technology, that somebody will want to use it in that way. And if they are a legitimate entity that can, you know, that we can partner with, then we will help them do that. But as a company, Tendermint, we won't be launching cryptocurrencies or anything of the sort. Because we are a U.S. company.
Every proof of stake chain that has tried this, that got to any significant size, has have all suffered from stake grinding attacks, as has been compiled in the list of, I'm sure you've read Andrew Polstra's papers on consensus through POS. And I suspect that you have obfuscated a process enough to where it has probably hit like your degree of comprehension over the issue. But I suspect that as soon as there's any value there, that somebody will, in fact, figure out where the game can be gamed.
Well, I can tell you exactly where it can be gamed.
Oh, perfect. Then share that with us. Let's hear it.
Sure. So, you know, the stake grinding attack is all about exploiting the non-randomness.
Well, it's about applying proof of work to proof of stake, right?
If it relied on an actual random number. But the problem is that, you know, most attempts or all attempts so far have used pseudo-random numbers that can be gamed. So Tendermint uses a deterministic consensus algorithm. There's no randomness to it. But here's where you can change, say, the order of validators. The round-robin algorithm that we use is fair. It's a fair deterministic round-robin algorithm. So it's difficult. But if you were to try to, in a crazy way, change the validator set by having entities that bond and unbond at the right time, maybe, but that's still, you can still prevent that from happening with a sensible filter for who can bond and how much, you know, bonding can happen.
But you're talking
that is no longer Byzantine fault tolerant.
Correct.
That violates your definition of Byzantine
fault tolerant algorithm, and how you use this algorithm is up to you.
The algorithm is dependent on the validators, though. So you
use case with bonding. But here's another example where you can attack it. Let's say you don't want to use bonding, but you want to use a system of voting. So maybe the people who own tokens on the system have a proportional amount of voting power who can vote on a set of validators. I mean, there's obviously ways to attack that system. You just do social engineering, right?
Civil attacks are probably...
There's no stake grinding here. I just want to make that clear. There's many ways to attack any system. All systems can be attacked. But stake grinding is not relevant to Tendermint.
Here's another. We can talk about that more at length. The nature of your claims are extraordinary, and you don't know what you don't know. And I don't know how your platform is designed. And certainly, I wish you the best of luck. If the best of luck. If in fact this thing does scale. But the nature of the claims are extraordinary, and a lot of this science was done in the 80s, way before you even started looking at distributed systems. Mm-hmm. Certainly quorum-based systems have been around since like the 70s. In one level or another. So I don't know that perhaps even you had the exposure to all of the old debates. And I see that a lot in the proof of stake crowd, is that they are reinventing the old debates that we had and resolved a long time ago in this quest for essentially perpetual motion. But let me ask you another question. In the sense that Bitcoin offers the ability for capital flight to be performed by way of converting registered value into fungible value, how do you rectify that with your project, which would always have been pre-mined and there is no avenue for fungibility to enter your system? Does that not perhaps defeat the entire purpose of having a cryptocurrency?
Well, so I just want to make it clear that our company, we do not have our own blockchain. We do not launch cryptocurrencies. What we do is we provide software and blockchain management tools. So we, you know, our way of monetizing this space is to give the core components for free and monetize through an intuitive tool for deploying and managing these blockchains. And our partners will be enterprise customers, so it's a B2B kind of business. Sorry, what was your question again?
Your network cannot your network cannot service the same needs as a cryptocurrency that is work-based because there's no way for fungible value to enter your system. The only way to enter value is unregistered terms.
A really simple way to reintroduce that. I mean, I've thought about this so many. There's so many ways to do it. Like, one is just to take an existing snapshot of any distributed ledger and just say, here, I'm going to seed it with this. And if you already own, say, Bitcoins as of this date, you can prove it on this ledger by signing something, and now you have coins. And maybe there's a window of time in which it can do that. Another way to do it is just to say, all right, we're going to use proof of work to distribute coins. We're not going to use proof of work for consensus, but if you can prove your work with the hash, you know, whatever, then you can get coins, and you can have whatever distribution scheme you want. But there's more interesting systems than that. I mean, you can create an organization that can vote on who can enter the system and how to distribute coins, a hierarchical system for managing a community.
All of those are registered. All of those are one way or another registered options, with the exception of proof of work, which is really what all proof of stake systems typically degrade towards anyways. Right. Nonetheless, that confirms what I suspected. Here's another thing I'm trying to figure out, and maybe you can help me. When you're actually participating in a, let's say, a Tendermint block system, where does the value route? So if I'm a bank and you're a bank and I want to send you dollars, at the end of the day, those dollars go through Fedwire or ACH, you know?
I'm sorry. One second. Yeah. Sorry. So can you repeat the question again? So when you...
Where does a settlement occur?
It depends on what mechanism you use to transfer the value, right? There's all sorts of ways of doing
it. But the point is that it doesn't use your mechanism to settle the value.
Right.
Oh, so the question is, how would it work on our system?
No.
Yes, how would it work in your system?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so we have a platform for creating blockchain applications. You would take maybe one of the cryptocurrency sample applications and perhaps launch it if you have the license to do so. Maybe you can back these tokens with funds that are held in custodian accounts in banks or other institutions. And that's just one way of doing it.
You're not answering the question, though, Jay. How do the funds actually get moved from one bank, from bank A to bank B?
Correct. I believe you offer IOUs. So how do those IOUs convert into value?
So you just answered it. You issue IOUs on the blockchain, you move them around, and you have a way for entities that are custodians of funds to settle with each other.
Who are
those? This is already being done, say, in Ripple.
No, that in Ripple it's also not being done.
In
it's
Ripple, still it goes through ACH and
so,
Fedwire.
So you're not answering the question. So either you don't understand the answer, or you're obfuscating. So when I send,
I just don't understand what you're asking.
So let's say Bank of Joshua needs to send $100 to Bank of Chris. So okay. we settle that in the Mint system, right, or in the Tendermint system. All right, I send an IOU to the Bank of Chris. How does Bank of Joshua actually make the transfer of $100 from Bank of Joshua to Bank of Chris in the Tendermint system or on a Tendermint blockchain?
Well, how does Chris settle to card cash?
How does he get his money?
Okay. The Tendermint system is not, a particular application. So there's no right answer here because we're not creating a settlement system. We create a
that is the right
so
answer.
Anyone can create.
That you just answered the question.
System.
So you've invented a message passing infrastructure, is what I would allege, which
it's
is fine.
Bank email.
But then what I suspect you're going to have a very hard time wrapping your head around at some point is that the transparency is in fact not a feature, it's a bug. That in fact a message that goes from A to B needs to be relayed to everybody, thus losing a lot of transparency benefits. I mean, the ability to have a private dialogue about the nature of your bank. And it seems to me very dubious that is any more efficient.
And that immutability is a bug in your system.
Right.
Yeah. Immutability is a bug in our system?
Yes.
Yes.
You don't want immutability.
What happens when the ACH system doesn't match your blockchain? What happens when your blockchain needs to match a record to another blockchain for which there was a human error at some point, and now you have to perform reconciliation between two immutable data structures?
Okay, so you would have a system for patching differences, and this would be encoded into your Tendermint application as business logic.
So you would have
everything.
So immutability is a feature.
Has to go through a transaction. So even if you want to undo things, it would have to be done through a transaction.
You should consider that immutability is a bug by which settlement can be performed between permissionless entities, and that to bring this into the world of registered securities is probably or certainly going to be a major problem for you as your company develops.
Immutability does not mean that you can't change what you want to change if there's a sensible way to change it.
It very literally does.
Oh, it does.
What immutability means.
GitHub and the way programmers use GitHub, they can change their code all they want, but it's still based on an immutable data structure. The blockchain is immutable.
GitHub is not an immutable data structure. There is a centralized entity that could absolutely 100% change it.
Correct.
Sorry?
GitHub is not an immutable data structure. GitHub is 100% centralized and controlled by someone who could absolutely change it.
GitHub, I mean Git.
It's irrelevant.
Git as well.
It's the same
thing. You can absolutely edit your Git.
It's also a database, binary. A plain old database.
So, Jay, something you haven't considered is that the nature of proof of work is in fact objectively true system, which I'm sure you've seen at some point, but there is nobody on the planet that can alter a transaction in Bitcoin. It is immutable. You're offering a subset of that immutability, which is fine because immutability is on a spectrum. But our point is that perhaps you're advertising something as immutable that not only doesn't need to be immutable, but perhaps shouldn't be immutable.
I really think that you're misunderstanding the word immutable. There's a particular definition for things like immutable data structures, which is what Git is. It's just a Merkle tree. And if you want to make additional modifications to your code, you add additional changes that become, go into your log of changes.
You're not entirely wrong, Jay, but there's immutability in the terms that we've always had it before Bitcoin. And then there's immutability in the terms that we've had it since Bitcoin. And in that latter sense, your project has no correlation in that it is trivially modified by the players involved. It requires significantly less energy than is available.
When people say that the blockchain is immutable, what they're saying is that changes to the system go through transactions, and the log of transactions is immutable.
No, they're not. They're saying it's objectively.
Application state is immutable. It means that there's an auditable trail of transactions that led to the current
no, Jay.
State.
Jay, what it means anything. What means system. Is that energy is required. It is objectively true because the energy that's required to make a change to affect and propagate on the network is inordinate. That's what it means, Jay.
What does that have to do with anything?
Everything to do with what that has to do with immutability
power to run any computer network. But it doesn't mean that you have to use the proof of energy being spent in order to secure the ledger.
Well, I think that you should probably consider that, because when you got into this space, the entirety of the proposition of the blockchain, that which makes notarization not only interesting but relevant, is this fact of the objective truth that a blockchain provides. And this was what was being described in Satoshi's definition of the word blockchain, is that proof of work is in fact what makes things immutable. To the degree that no one actor or even a significant number of actors are needed in order to make a change. I mean, that you need to put energy into the system. This is a artifact of the universe and not
just
humans.
Just a couple months ago, the top, all the top Bitcoin mining pool operators were in a single room. Now, honestly, the only reason why the system works is because those 9 people want to make it work in the way that it works today, which is censorship resistant and is not double spent attacked all the time, which is, in their interest. But it's really up to them. They can do whatever they want. There's no truth to the Bitcoin blockchain.
Yes, there is.
That's absolutely untrue.
Let's agree to disagree there.
Well,
it's a point of contention that you're absolutely 100% wrong about, however, and it's disingenuous to claim otherwise.
Sure.
Jay, you fundamentally misunderstand what mining is if you believe that, which is okay, but that explains a lot of the problems that I foresee with your project, which you can revisit this interview later and probably understand in some time. But I want to actually investigate one other claim that is really I found incredible and I'm really interested in hearing. You have claimed that you are looking into offering bearer bonds or bearer instruments of some kind on Tendermint.
No, I never said that. I said that our system can be used to create bearer bonds and secure bearer bonds. And the much similar way that Bitcoin does.
Well, that I'd like to hear a little bit more about then, because that is a humongous claim. That is in fact the efficiency of a blockchain, is that it provides bearer instruments online.
Yeah.
Okay, so you do recognize that.
To have a Byzantine fault tolerant ledger of bearer bonds that no entity controls. There's no trusted.
The bearer bonds are what you got into here for. The bearer instruments are what you got into this for. When you started your digital currency exchange, you were in fact facilitating the exchange of bearer instruments, and that's why that was very interesting. They weren't registered security, and therein has lied all of the efficiency of the blockchain thus far, is in providing bearer instruments to its users. So tell us.
I came into this space, and I'm excited about Bitcoin and the blockchain space because it provides a way for humans or societies or communities to coordinate and to agree on anything that they want. And whether that be bearer bonds or some other system to account for
fish
anything,
notarization,
you know, who gets to do what,
but we've,
or maybe it can be money, or it can be some other system based on reputation. Who knows?
We've had those systems for a long time,
ways
Jay.
That we can experiment with human coordination.
Jay, that's disingenuous because we've had the ability to do human coordination for a very long time with plain old databases.
We have had the ability to, coordinate, sure, but we've always had to trust some single entity ultimately, and that was the problem.
No, you haven't. As Chris said, there have been plenty of systems such as Raft and all these others that allow for, like...
Raft and Paxos need trusted entities in order to function. They're not Byzantine fault tolerant.
But your system needs trusted entities as well. You're telling me that you basically at the Genesis block define who those trusted entities are. And every single block has one signer, right? Multiple signers, but essentially one person, basically sending it out to the network, right? There is a central point there.
Well, there is a temporary leader that needs to propose a block, but ultimately it's up to the entire validator set, or at least the supermajority, two-thirds of them, to commit a block. They only commit blocks that they agree with.
What is a block time on Tendermint, or is that definable by whoever sets up a Tendermint blockchain?
Sure. It's mostly... there is a limit to how fast you can commit blocks, because it requires the 2n squared signature shares. But, when you're talking about even a global blockchain with 100 validators, you can commit blocks on the order of every second. And you don't need additional confirmation blocks as in like Bitcoin does.
I just actually went to the bathroom. I came back. I was hearing most of this, but I didn't hear all of this. Forgive me if this was already brought up, but isn't email, in fact, a solution to consensus in many ways? Certainly that is a message passing infrastructure pre-existed.
I'm trying to figure out the difference between this message passing and a robust email system that's encrypted between banks that would be private. And I don't know, you'd have a central authority just record all emails so you couldn't delete them.
Yeah, I mean, you would have to trust that central authority and take their word for what happened. What if you don't have to trust any single authority, but you can,
your claim
is spread it across many people.
But Jay, claim is that not trusting a single authority is more efficient, right? That was your claim.
Sorry?
Your claim earlier was that not trusting a single authority and putting them into blocks is an efficiency.
Yes, it can be an efficiency improvement in many scenarios.
I want to continue the dialogue on the bearer instrument.
Sure.
So as I understand in Tendermint, these messages are passed around, but then you resort to ACH or Fedwire at a given time to actually deliver value. So that seems to me to reek of a registered security.
Well, that's if you want to create a registered security system. Tendermint has nothing to do with ACH. It's just a platform where you can create any application.
But
you can create a cryptocurrency based on our technology that doesn't require, an underlying banking system, but it's just a bearer instrument, a cryptocurrency, just as Bitcoin is.
But
then you wouldn't need to deal with ACH.
But you're saying that this bearer instrument then would be limited to the network of people you trust. So within that network, we could have some degree of anonymity of a network of, say, 100 or something, of who registered what at some time and then have lost it into the ether of the...
You certainly wouldn't be able to validate your own transactions in that system, which would mean that you actually don't get the opportunity in a Tendermint blockchain to trust yourself, which is probably the biggest feature of Bitcoin.
It's a very obtuse claim. I don't think you've understood the nature of what a bare instrument means.
Yeah, you cannot, in your system, do you realize that one cannot trust themselves?
Excuse me?
In Bitcoin, you can validate your own transactions. You can trust yourself to validate your own transactions. In your system, because validation can only be done by those who are permissioned onto the system, one cannot trust themselves.
Oh, so you're saying that you trust Bitcoin because you can partake in mining?
No, you can partake in the validation. You certainly could partake in mining, but you can also partake in the validation of blocks.
You can relay your own validation of transactions and blocks and tendermint. It's just a matter of who has the authority to.
I have to look at the code to make that determination. It's just the nature of the claim is a bit absurd to me because you're talking about bearer bonds that exist in a network of 100 people or something, right? So I don't know that it's no longer...
Which means that you also have to have a market for those bearer bonds.
And it's also... I strongly doubt the claim because what that would mean is that he's created some kind of a coin join apparatus or some kind of a...
Well, that he's providing fungibility.
Right. And I don't think he's even considered that.
Yeah, you have to be able to export value from the system that you're trying to get value in from.
And there's that.
And because you've nixed mining, you don't have that ability, Jay.
Mixed mining?
Nixed.
Removed it. Yeah, because there's no proof of work, you can't even enter value into the system. Right.
Unless through Bitcoin.
One can't get fungible value into the system because
you have no proof of work.
Because we have no proof. I mean, I just explained that if you really want to use proof of work to prove that you spent X amount of value to have some kind of, token that represents the amount of energy you burn, you can do that.
Except that it has to be verified by a person. So again, you've lost the anonymity.
It would be verified by an algorithm. So this is what you would do.
So you enter proof of work into it.
Architecture, the system. You would create your application, make it so that it rewards people who, create proof of work proofs and give them, basically inflate the coin supply or whatever, give them, just generate new coins and give it to them for, having a proof of work transaction.
No, you're 100% correct, but now you're back at the reason why you left the altcoin exchanges was because you recognize that it's the nature of proof of work to coalesce onto a single chain.
Well, the problem is when you use proof of work for consensus. When proof of work becomes your security mechanism, it means that if you want more security, you have to expend more energy. And that's what I wanted to say.
How do you get more security in your system?
Who gives more security in our system?
How do you get more security?
You perform KYC and AML.
Well, yeah, how do you get more security in your system? You're saying that there is a degree of security here. You're acknowledging that, right?
I acknowledge that Bitcoin is secure.
Okay, so if there's degrees of security, then is your system less secure or more secure or the same secure as Bitcoin? And can you change the security level of your chains?
Okay. The security properties in Tendermint are different. It is potentially more secure than Bitcoin. Okay. And it depends on how you use Tendermint. For example, if you create a proof of stake on top of Tendermint, now what I'm saying is that Tendermint is not a proof of stake system. It's an accountable consensus system. It makes it so that it's difficult to attack, but if it gets attacked, you can figure out who had done it. On top of that, you can build a proof of stake system. For example, by bonding coins, bonding tokens that are intrinsic inside the blockchain in order to become validated.
You mean pre-mining?
No, not pre-mining. Bonding. It's a different thing. It's freezing your coins, saying, I'm going to put these coins, post them as collateral. I can't move them until after a long time, after I unbond. But while they're frozen and while I'm a validator, I need to perform my duty as a validator and make sure I don't do bad things. Otherwise, I'll lose my collateral.
Well, I think we're about to wrap up this interview. I think I definitely appreciate very much you coming on here and talking to us. There's a lot of people that are scared of us, and we have questions mostly, and I understand that they're tough questions, but you did your best to answer them, and I very much respect that.
It was a pleasure.
I would suggest you consider, and I think what will happen in your side of the business, a lot of your competitors will figure out, quote-unquote, figure out how to drop the need for blocks and they will instead revert to a message passing system that is very analogous to what we see with HTTP currently or something.
And eventually we'll be right back to just ACH and Swift.
Right. As, I think as people realize that they're sending messages and they're not actually transferring value. I've heard your explanation of why you need a block. I got to really see maybe your code. It sounds very much like a stretch to me. I think that probably the need for a block had more to do with the need for
marketing.
Marketing, which, yeah. which I think maybe even you would agree with at some level. But maybe
no, it's absolutely not true. I don't know how to make it even any clearer. The reason why we need blocks is for efficiency.
That's
you need to win squares.
Patently dishonest, Jay. It has to be dishonest.
That's why we call it a blockchain. It's just a coincidence that
Jay
are excited about blockchains today.
Jay, you're engaging in self-preservation.
That's patently dishonest. We know for a fact that blockchains are not more efficient. Claiming efficiency is like is what you can do to idiots, but not to us.
I think you are misunderstanding what I'm saying. I'm saying that you need to.
It's like telling me you have
transactions into blocks for efficiency. Okay, I'm not saying that blockchains are more efficient than a single database. That's absurd.
Oh, we agree.
We agree.
Yeah, I'm saying you need to group transactions into blocks.
So let me ask you a quick question.
Is there a time
that you think Swift and ACH have failed at transferring value from one place to another as central database holding organizations?
It's not nearly as transparent.
That's not the question, though. Have they failed?
It's costly, isn't it?
It's not that costly.
It's extremely cheap.
How much does it cost to transfer, make a payment?
Almost free.
What size
payment between who and who, and we'll tell you roughly.
Okay. Well, then.
So you don't know that answer, Jay? I mean, we just gave it to you.
What is the answer?
It's pennies. It's essentially free. It's almost nothing.
Yeah, it depends on who it is, but here, like the United States, for example, checks are free to clear. You have certainly between countries, those costs go down to very, very low amounts as the amounts get bigger. I mean, there's a whole spectrum of answers depending on the corridor.
Bank to bank is maybe $2.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah, but you have to use their currency, So it's a matter of which currency do you want to use for transferring value.
So you're nominating
Just to be clear, Jay, what you're telling us is that in a Tendermint system, someone will be able to move money from the United States, U.S. dollars, to Chinese yuan, and then on top of it, we'll also use Swift, and they will get a better deal. That is your claim.
No, I never said such a thing.
That is actually your claim.
I think that's your claim, Jay.
Okay, well, I think this interview is over. Thanks a lot, guys.
Jay, where can we find out more about you? Why don't you plug your project for the listeners?
It's Tendermint. Visit Tendermint.com. Sign up for a newsletter. We're creating the blockchain platform of the future to secure.
It's not really a blockchain, though.
Thank you, Jay. Have a good day. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So that ended abruptly.
Huh? I mean, the thing is that we were pushing it with him. I don't think these guys look, they were over the hump, I think. I'm not positive.
You think we're on the other side?
I think we're on the other side of the hump. So now we can start asking actual questions about really where is the rubber hitting the road.
Yeah, I think we know now that blockchains are stupid.
I know that. I don't think everybody else knows that. And when you look, I mean, there's
My point is, I think that we're in the process of vindication on this.
I think so. I agree. I mean, we don't know this, but certainly if you're listening to this at this point, you may have some reservations as well. Any comments you have, I think, about the process, we'd love to see in the SoundCloud below. Maybe you can help, this guy out.
Jay.
Yeah. I mean, here's the point that Jay didn't make. Jay didn't make the point that if you could, in fact, perform, let's say, 10,000 settlements on his blockchain and then issue one settlement for the difference per the day on, ACH or Swift, that would be a way of reducing the fees.
You do not know that.
I know you don't. Well, let me finish. But then the problem there is that the risk that you're undertaking in these transfers is then proportionate to the amount of time that was going on independently of those transfers.
You also don't know how ACH and Swift do it now.
I agree. But here's the point. The only reason I bring this up is that he doesn't know either.
No. He's designing an entire system to replace something he has not taken the humility, the humble time. I'm going to call it humble time from now on. The humble time to learn about.
You know what's amazing, too, is the cycle of altcoining is so pronounced. We've seen this for years now. And the newest round of altcoins are, in fact, the altcoins that the bankers wanted. But they're altcoins.
Yes.
And there's always the same mentality here. Okay, we can't compete with Bitcoin.
Let's consider as competition here. We have Symbiont. We have them. We have Eris. R3Sev. How many of these platforms are going to be developed before people start saying, there's too many platforms being developed for a space with no customers?
And Isabel Kaminska's point is, you all doing this to have one platform? And if you're now maintaining multiple platforms, what have you achieved?
Correct.
Yes. What have you achieved?
Yeah. Well, not only that, their system is to build multiple platforms in its own right.
Yes.
So...
Look, if your blockchain was designed by an altcoin exchange person,
if you
might want to give some serious thought to perhaps where the providence of those claims are.
Right. And you know what? It's really funny to me. This week with the Apple a court case where Apple's being asked to basically break the encryption on an iPhone because they made the hardware, I have a lot of reservations about blockchains whose software is released by a company. Explain that to me. How do you have any immutability? Like, what is your obligation legally? Your obligation legally is far greater than Bitcoin's. Far greater.
Yeah.
Which it's completely obtuse. The entire notion is obtuse. The proposition is obtuse. And it's a little sad to me that, like, Jay doesn't really know what's going on there. You mentioned that you think maybe I might be wrong on the trusting yourself validation portion. I may be true.
I got to re-listen to it. I got to maybe spend some time on the code
I'm
see.
I'm not positive.
But you know what? Here's the thing, too, is that like almost all of these propositions are message passing architectures. They haven't figured that out yet.
That's what it comes down to. And that
is a very deep science that we have so much like knowledge on.
Yes.
And they're going to reinvent it badly. That's what's going to end up happening.
Yeah.
And I think what they're going to do is probably walk away from it saying that they were successful in their original goals. But the truth is that they settled for something that was significantly inferior and uninteresting.
I also don't think banks are going to do this again. A lot of banks sunk their wad on this with Ripple.
Yeah.
And now they're like eating shit when Ripple's like, well, we're not really going to be around anymore.
Interledger.
Hyperledger.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, whatever. So like.
Well, 2016 is going to be a great year for blockchain. I really am so excited about like seeing a lot of the hype from 2015 hit its natural conclusion. Plus, we've got Halving Day coming up. And I'm really excited to see about what all the discussion's going to be about what the future of Bitcoin is. Regardless of how you feel about Halving Day, it's fun to watch because it's stressful and it's weird. And it's all the crazies come out. Come on. Who doesn't like that?
Well, the craze is definitely
It's like the
out.
Full moon of Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah, dude.
It's Bitcoin's full moon. It's Halving Day.
you're like in the psychology war. It's like, you're like, must be Halving Day. No, just the full moon. Woo.
All right, everyone. So we've got more content coming out. We actually have some really big stuff coming out in the next week or two. We can't talk about it. We're not sure if we're going to be able to pull things off. We've got a bunch of plans out there. We're going to share them with you when we can. So stay tuned. We've got another episode coming up here. I think we have even another guest coming on our regular show. We're going to have Cordy, maybe. We're not really sure. He's a great guy, but it's just
we've been trying
our
to get
schedules.
Him on. He's agreed to come on, but it's just difficult to get him on.
Yeah.
Like
he's an old Bitcoiner.
He's busy.
He's got no reason to wake up.
He's busy.
He's got his Bitcoin and his bitches.
Don't tell anyone that.
Actually no idea anything about him, which is why we want
him
kind
on. He's one of those guys that like the core guys know about and very few other people really like I think know about. And I mean like everyone my guess is that everyone who listens to this podcast knows exactly who Organ of Cordy is, but a lot of people do not. So like we're excited to have him on if we can get him on.
All right, guys. So subscribe to this on iTunes if you liked what you heard. Subscribe to it on Stitcher if you liked what you heard. You could reach out to me on Telegram at Brighton36.
Talk to Chris, don't talk to me.
Or on Skype and on Twitter, I'm at DeRose Tech. You'll have to be in the mystery as far as where you can reach John Seth. If you're lucky,
you can message me on Drop Zone. That's the only place I'll respond.
There you go.
And this is John Seth chunking up the deuce of the South. The interview has ended. Go in peace.